Hey family, this is Reginald Kuakaru with Good Medic Centered Living, and this is a channel where I answer the questions that Mom and Him said you should never ask, all right? But also, it is to give you the ability to answer those questions for yourself and to educate you in a way that you have good information and knowledge where you're not just accepting what someone told you. So I'm going to give you resources and everything where you can go and look up a lot of this knowledge and information for yourself and look deeper into it if you want. So one of the worst things I feel that you can do is to just accept what someone says. And that includes me. I do not want you to follow me or simply just accept what I say and just believe, okay? We believed as Christians and we were taken for a ride, all right? So here, I want you to gain the knowledge and so you will know, so that you will know beyond a shadow of a doubt, because that's the only way you're going to get past these fears, the guilt, and all the stuff that you keep going through. So this channel is not about changing minds of Christians or trying to recruit them over or anything like that. It's for the people who are already journeying away from Christianity and need information and knowledge to encourage them, to uplift them, and to make them bolder in understanding that their journey and their path, that they're going the right way, okay? So I'm going to give you this lecture tonight. And it is specifically to help you understand the ancient teachings before Christianity changed them. And those teachings will help you. They'll uplift you, all right? They'll inspire you. But it is definitely not to change somebody's mind. It's not to beat somebody down over their beliefs. It is definitely to uplift you. And I hope that when you get to the end of this, that you will be uplifted and that you will take the opportunity to go and get more information if you so choose. And then we can go from there. But this channel is definitely about helping those who are already journeying away from Christianity and just need answers. Okay. So without further ado, let's get started. From my knowledge and research into Kemetic spiritual in the Kemetic spiritual system, the story of Jesus is esoterically about the journey of the soul while transitioning into, through, and out of physical life. Okay, so we are taught that Jesus is a historical person, but from an esoteric perspective, it is about the soul, because from the Kemetic perspective, that was the real life. Okay, not our physical life. The real life is the soul. So the everything that is happening is for the benefit or for the detriment of the soul if you don't grasp the knowledge and information, okay? But that's what it's about. So that's what the Gospels are about, okay? So Jesus is the personification, okay? Y'all know the English and literature terms, okay? It's the personification of the ancient concept of Christ, the revealer of the light of wisdom within all humanity, okay? Another way to say this is that Jesus is a personification of the aha moment. You know, you just might be sitting there and you go like, oh snap, I get it now. Oh man, yeah, oh wow. You know, you might just be sitting around and all of a sudden something just becomes clear for you. You get it, okay? That's what Jesus is. It's the personification of that, oh, wow, yeah, I got it now. I get it. Aha, you know? That's what it is. And I'll explain a little bit more about that here. And this is, so the ancients were very specific as to characterizing an experience as passive, receptive mode, or an active mode, okay? We know them today as divine feminine and divine masculine, all right? So divine masculine is the active mode. Divine feminine is the passive or receptive mode, okay? And that can be on many different levels. So I'm just talking about right now this aha moment, okay? So we can translate the word in this sense of divine as universal, okay? So in other words, the meaning of divine means that it's just universal, that it's something that applies to everything, to all of creation, okay? All right. So Jesus was personified as masculine because the aha moment.
Hey family, Reginald Martin here. Are you feeling stuck in life, struggling mentally to find direction and purpose after questioning your Christian beliefs? It's time for a breakthrough. Introducing Unapologetically You, a 3-month program for overcoming negative religious programming and living authentically. This is a one-of-a-kind, life-changing coaching program tailored for those on the journey of breaking away from Christianity. My unique skills, knowledge base, and personalized guidance help you to unlearn the negative programming, reform your shattered beliefs, prioritize your own needs without feeling guilty or selfish, and unlock your potential to live life on your terms, and you can discover your true purpose. You can transform your life, throw off those mental shackles, and reach your true potential with Unapologetically You, a 3-month program for overcoming negative religious programming and living authentically. Ready to take that first step? Click the link in the video description to access my exclusive free video, packed with valuable insights to jumpstart your journey. Visit workwithreginaldmartin.com and begin the journey to living life on your terms. Back to the video.
Is an active event. It's active. It's not you just sitting there like, Right here, right now, I'm in my feminine mode. Okay, what the ancients would call the feminine mode. So I am going into my inner mind and I'm thinking, I'm contemplating. Okay. The ancient definition for wisdom is the inner contemplation of knowledge. Knowledge is an active concept, so you're learning. But then when you grasp the knowledge, you're thinking about it, you're ruminating about it, you're contemplating it. That's where wisdom comes from. That's where you get that aha moment, okay? So the Gospels are really dramas or plays teaching initiates using Jesus as the teacher or revealer of the idea, okay? So in other words, so one book that confirms this idea is The Pagan Christ. And if you want to look, find these books yourself. So I have actual links to them in the video description, okay? So The Pagan Christ, and it's by Tom Harper. So T-O-M-H-A-R-P-U-R. Okay, so The Pagan Christ is blind faith killing Christianity. But he says the Gospels are really dramas about the Christos, with Jesus in the starring role as a dramatic personality. Jesus is symbolic, is the symbolic personification of the Christos. Okay, so me and Tom Harper, that's two crazy people in the world at least, because we both saying that Jesus ain't historical. That's one way to look at it. But I know some other people that were saying that too. So we're not alone in this. Okay. So the knowledge that became part of the Bible was meant to give initiates being trained in the Egyptian mystery systems information about their individual journey as a soul and that of humanity. Okay. And just like any teacher today, and me, when I was a school teacher, I would try to find new and interesting ways to present information to my students so they didn't get bored, okay? It was the same back then, and someone came up with the drama that became part of now what we know as the Bible. So they came up with these four dramas. Now, there's a reason they picked four, okay? The number four, you know, that there's a reason that they picked four Gospels. But the Christian fathers did that. But I'm not going to get into that right now. So Jesus was meant to explain the aha moment and the impacts, or how it impacts us and enlightens us, okay? So the thing that you must understand is that this aha moment of awakening is not a one-time singular event, okay? Everyone has a series of awakenings throughout their lifetime. All of us do. I mean, it might be in relationships, it might be in finances, it might be on the job, it might be about a cooking recipe. It could be anything, but you can have aha moments in many different aspects of your life. They can be some of the most mundane things that you can think about. Okay, You know, baking cookies and you have an aha moment about, man, this will work. You know, this recipe, you know, oh, I could do this in this recipe. It could be something mundane. It doesn't have to be something monumental and catastrophic for it to be an aha moment, okay? Or a Jesus moment, I guess you could say, okay? In the Bible, Jesus had also had followers or disciples. The disciples represented personality types with the astrological signs at their foundation, okay? So the disciples weren't historical people either. They were meant to express our journey through these personality types and how we handle these types. All of us have at least 12 of them, okay? That's why they were 12. And guess what? The 12 coincide with the 12 signs of the zodiac. How coincidental, okay? So some psychologists connected to Carl Jung call the personality types archetypes. An archetype is a common pattern of behavior that a society and culture recognizes. We speak archetypal language all the time. They did the same thing in ancient times. We just have different words. So we're familiar with archetypal language and archetypal personalities. For example, if I said someone is a nerd, okay, I picked the nerd because people can call me that sometimes. You know, I used to get mad at that, but now I'm like, you know, especially when I was young, man. I was a kind of a nerd type in school. I guess if I wasn't an athlete, I was probably would have been one of the guys just melting to the wall or something. But I was a pretty good athlete, so people knew me. But anyway, but I was a nerd or a bookworm. Okay, those are both archetypal expressions. So if you say that about somebody, then they automatically know that certain type of person comes to mind. If I said someone was a real warrior, you would have an idea about the person's personality without me ever having to say anything more. If I said she's a boss, you would know the type of woman she is without me having to say anything more, okay? If you understand what a boss is, okay? If I said he's a bully, you would know the type of personality that individual is. A nerd, a warrior, a boss, and a bully are all personality archetypes, okay? Jesus and the disciples are about personality archetypes. These same concepts within ancient times were discussed and analyzed. They simply had a different language in which to talk about these ideas, and they connected them holistically, mind, body, and soul. Jesus and his 12 disciples are on one level addressing the personality, but on the other levels, helping you to explore the idea of using universal laws and common sense. Today, we call the ancient concepts using faith, praying, or getting therapy, but they're all processes the ancient Africans used to be more, do more, and have more along their life journey, okay? The Bible stories with Jesus and the disciples are the individual soul that is gaining wisdom through reconciling these personality archetypes through a lifetime, okay? Again, we know this character or personified soul in the Bible as Jesus. The origin of the person we know as Jesus Christ can be found in the ancient Kemet or Egypt. Jesus Christ is a composite of two Kemetic netters, Osiris or Osar and Heru, okay, and Horus. So Heru and Horus are the same. So Osar is the Kemetic name, okay? Osiris is the Greek name. Heru is the Kemetic name. Horus is the Greek name, okay? But same two netters. Now, there are two distinct functions within the human experience or the human psyche that they're talking about when we're talking about Jesus and Christ, okay? So there are two different functions, okay? And that's what I want you to understand here. So the experience of the inner Christ is unique and real. And this is when I've talked before, a lot of times when you say that Jesus never existed, the average Christian will say that you're dismissing their inner experience, okay? But that's not what I'm talking about, okay? They've just been taught to name that experience Jesus or Christ or Jesus Christ, okay? But I'm not dismissing the experience because I said that Jesus didn't exist. In other words, to them, if Jesus didn't exist, then there was no way that they could have that experience. That's not true. All of these, again, I'm talking about universal experiences that are universal to humanity and to human nature. And all spiritual systems talk about these ideas. They just call them different things. Okay. So the experience of the inner Christ is unique and real. And Christos, the Christos, is an ancient archetype. Okay. Jesus in its original allegorical form can have practical meaning for those that choose to understand the comedic science and symbolic meaning. Okay. So what is a Christ? All right. So I've talked about Jesus. So now what is a Christ? Because we know this entity as Jesus Christ. But again, they're two different things. So on one level, a Christ is a person that has evolved to the level of knowing and connected to experiencing their God self or higher self, okay? So that person is comfortable with their own intuitive inner guidance. That would be a Christ, okay? They've grown to that level to where they can allow that inner guidance to be something to actually guide them and move them, okay? One way this might happen in our everyday life is when we go through emotional storms. Okay, when the shit hits the fan and we have stuff happening, okay? The archetype of going through the storm of life was represented in the biblical miracle of Jesus walking on the water, okay? So again, we know it as a miracle, but it has deeper esoteric meaning, okay? It never happened historically. It was to express an esoteric idea, and it's presented symbolically and through allegory. Okay, so in Matthew chapter 14, verse 22 and 30 through 32, and I'm not going to read all of these, but just give you a synopsis. It says the miracle of Jesus is recounted. It talks about it being windy and possibly storming. The disciples were afraid and witnessed Jesus walking on the water. The disciple Peter even began walking on the water until he began to sink. Jesus had to rescue him. Jesus got into the boat with all of them, and everybody calmed down, okay? This story is expressing what we call the archetypal pattern of a victim, okay? That might be one way you could look at this, is that a person is being victimized. They're going through the storm. So the storm of life was happening, and the disciples, or personality aspects, were crying out for someone to save them from the storm. Oh, damn, I wish somebody could help me. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't pay my bill. Oh, God, what's happening? You know, what am I going to do? Okay. Peter at one point began to believe that he could handle the storm. Peter as a personality type. And he began walking on the water, or shall we say, rising above the storms of his emotions. Okay, so the water in this instance can represent emotions, okay? Until something, maybe a negative friend, oh, girl, you can't make this. Girl, I don't know how you're going to get the money. I mean, you just really messed up. You know, why are you doing this, you know? Okay, so a negative friend starts talking to you, and then all of a sudden you start to get agitated again, okay? That's why you need to stay away from negative-ass people, okay? But that shook Peter. And Peter started to lose his faith and he started to sink, okay? But he was rescued. So when Jesus admonished Peter for not having faith, it was to teach us that we do have the power to overcome our storms in life, okay? That's what it is, just a generalization. It's just a universal meaning, okay? So you don't drown in your emotions. You rise above them and walk calmly through your storm. Once you come through the storm with the trust and guidance of your higher self, you are then a Christ. Jesus is the aha moment. Oh, damn, I get it. Christ is your state of being, okay? Christ means that you have now become enlightened from the situation that you went through. Whatever it might be, okay? So I say that again. Jesus is the aha moment, and Christ is a state of being enlightened, okay? So that's a quick synopsis of the story and what it was meant to convey through the knowledge of the archetypes. There is still more esoteric knowledge to pull from almost every line of that scripture if you want to really get down and get detailed into it. The difference in understanding the science and believing in the miracle will be monumental in your life. Instead of marveling at the biblical miracle, you can understand the meaning of it and what it had, what that meaning is in your life. It's no longer looking to Jesus in the storm of your life like, oh, Jesus, please save me, okay? Oh, Jesus, just help me, you know? Now you must understand that it's something that you have to do, that you have the inner power to do that for yourself, okay? That's what these teachings are about, okay? The power is not out there somewhere. The power is in here, okay? That's what these teachings are about. So now you have a basic esoteric understanding of the difference between Jesus and Christ. And that is very, very basic, okay? So just giving you an idea about what this means, okay? And that's from the ancient Kemetic paradigm. So this is the deal. You are gods and goddesses in training, okay? The Kemetic teachings are designed to give you universal information that you can apply to your life. They're processes that become a way of life and empower you and make your life better, okay? That's what these things do. So Christianity, on the other hand, teaches you that you are powerless and need a savior. Jesus, save me, please. Oh, Jesus, help me. I need it. You know, I don't know how I'm gonna pay that bill. Jesus, can you help me? Okay. So that's what we've been taught as Christians, okay, to basically be helpless. But I want to ask you a question, and this is serious, okay? So this is a question I want to ask, and this is a serious question. In your life experience, has Jesus ever shown up at your door and knocked on your door? And I'm being dead serious right now. Has Jesus ever knocked on your door and says, I'm here to help you? Okay? And I already know the answer to that. Hell to the no. Jesus ain't never showed up and never will. Okay? So now understand, I didn't ask you if you gave credit to Jesus, because as a Christian, you're taught that when you come through the storm, oh, Jesus just came to my life. Jesus just helped me through this. And oh, I just thank you, Jesus. You gave credit to Jesus. But guess who did the work? You did. Everything that happened, everything that you went through and came through, you did it. But Jesus didn't walk, knock on your door and say, hey, yo, I'm here to help. You know, what can I do for you? That didn't happen. You just been taught to give credit to an entity that you believe was historical. But your inner experience, your outer experience, you came through it yourself. There is no shame in understanding and knowing that. You don't have to feel like, oh, well, wait a minute. Am I being prideful? Am I being, you know, all of this stuff that Christianity teaches you? No, it is about you and your journey, your inner journey, and how you handle things, okay? That's the bottom line. So basically, and this is the thing that I'm getting to in my African Mind Rewired class, is I'm teaching you how to go in and access these inner processes, how to understand the mechanics of prayer, how to understand these ideas that are supposed to be a part of your life, not something that you just do as a, a crisis intervention. That's what I call Christianity in their prayer. It's crisis intervention, you know? Oh my God, God, can you please help me now? I promise if you help me through this, God, I'll never do this again. Come on now, we already know we're gonna make that happen again. Hey, I'll never do it again, God. Okay, one more time. but seriously, so you have to understand that a lot of what the ancients will teach, because what Christianity was supposed to be was, it was like elementary school for spirituality. That's what it was intended to be. but it got corrupted over the years, okay? It was supposed to be an entry into these ideas, okay? An entry into the mystery school ideas, all right? But it got corrupted. So what we got was a watered-down, twisted version of African spirituality that somebody just made some stuff up, mixed it up, and then gave it back to us as something else, okay? Gave it back to the world as something else. Now, understand, I'm an African-American man, and I am expressing these ideas through who I am, through this physical incarnation. But these ideas work universally for all of us, all of humanity, okay? So don't think that just because you're Black that you have some special dispensation that you can use these ideas and nobody else can. That's not true, you know? They were never meant to be that way, you know? But today, because of our society, we've gotten into these different camps like that. So that's it. So my class is at www.AfricanMindRewired.com. If you're interested in learning these ideas and really improving your life, come on by. We can help you. So I don't try to force anybody. I can't sell you on it, nothing like that. I know it's good. If you want it, come get it. If not, it's cool. I mean, you live your life and it's all good, okay? So that's what it's about. Now, you got questions? I can answer questions. Yes, Linda Rahman, Christ is a state of mind. It's a state of becoming enlightened. You can Christ every day. You can Christ every moment. When you have that aha moment, that's a Christ moment. That means you're transforming, because who you were before that aha moment, you transformed and you changed into something different. You've been reborn. You've rebirthed. Okay? That's what that idea means. So that's the idea of Christ being reborn and resurrected and all of that. When you get that aha moment, you've just been reborn, because the old you now has changed into something different consciously. All right. So definitely. That's what the Christ is. All right. The people of ancient Sylvain Blaise said, the people of ancient Kemet want to reincarnate as human. If they did, why? And if that's the case, why as a soul in today's world want to evolve spiritually and not reincarnate as human? Well, from their perspective, it wasn't just about being human, Vaughn. So there's other levels of existence. But they saw any incarnation outside of the spiritual world as an opportunity to learn and gain wisdom. So that's why. That's what we come here to do, to learn as a physical form. We come here to gain wisdom. A soul gains wisdom through opposites, okay? And this is what I mean by that. When you do something or experience something that is painful, that's when you end up gaining wisdom, when you overcome the pain. Okay, something happens to you that transforms you. Okay, you're reborn when you overcome the pain. So in that sense, the body becomes the womb for the possibility of the soul's transformation. Okay, so we incarnate to learn, and you can incarnate to other dimensions and levels of existence. We're not the only beings in the whole entire universe. That's a Christian idea. That's a religious idea that's very limited, okay? So as a human, you help the soul evolve and vice versa, okay? So you're in a symbiotic relationship. So first, there is a difference between religion and spirituality. Okay, so difference between religion and spirituality. Christianity taught us that they're the same, but they're not. Religion is about rules and doctrines made by men, okay? Religion promotes the three C's, which is control, conformity, and restraint. Good morning, everybody. So good morning there, the real Blazer, okay? Trying to say these names. Jason, I see you there. Kenneth, Lee, so I see you guys there. So good morning, good morning. So like I said, just but religion is made by man. It's rules that are made by man to make sure that people conform to the ideas that they need, okay? African spirituality and Kemetic spirituality teaches that you're born spiritual, okay? Whereas religion teaches that you're born a sinner, okay? Separate from God, all this stuff. And that's just not true. So the original teachings were that that to be spiritual, you don't have to follow anyone else's rules. And that's what a lot of Christianity, what we have passed down to us from the Catholic Church, was ideas that legislated against teaching or you not going through the church first in order to get your guidance, okay? So African spirituality taught that you have your own inner guidance and you can connect to that. So spirituality is about expanding expression and experience, so your life experience. So now let's look at this idea of, about Jesus, okay? So I'm going to say some things, and it's going to be kind of quick, guys. So just pay attention. If you got questions, then we can talk about the questions there, okay? So Jesus is a despiritualized, disconnected version of the ancient idea of Christ, okay? So the ancient idea of Christ existed thousands of years before Jesus was ever thought of, okay? So at least 10,000 years, most likely more, because people, they've dated the pyramids. Conventional Egyptology has dated the pyramids at about 6,000 years old, but there's a lot of evidence that these pyramids might be at least 50,000 years old. Okay, so 30 to 50,000 years old at least. And based on like weathering patterns and stuff like that, water, which, you know, the pyramids are in the desert, so there hadn't been water for at least 10,000 years, but it shows water erosion in that complex. So it had to be before 10,000 years ago. Okay. The idea of Christ is based on a concept or a title for a soul that has reached an enlightened state, okay? That was the original, and that's one part of that, okay? But the idea that when a soul has reached an enlightened state, then the individual that soul is within becomes a Christ, okay? That's what this idea was about. And this is connected to the Bible stories as well, and I'll connect this here in a little bit. But basically, the way that they looked at it is that each individual contains in them a seed of the God, of the God particle of God within them, okay? And that seed is the potential to be a God, okay? It's the potential to become enlightened and to know things and to get back into the state of a soul that was had unlimited awareness while it was in the soul world, so to speak, okay? So the idea is that when you're born and in the physical and you have that seed within you, that the enlightened aspect means that you become aware and you don't die the second death. Okay. Everyone, and this is what's different from is what's different about African spirituality. They said everyone is potentially a Christ. As male, female, everybody is potentially a Christ, as that, and it's just a part of the aspect of us being human. Okay. In other words, we have experience, and through those experiences, we become enlightened. All right. That's the most simplistic way to put this idea. Okay. Religion made it something different. So the Catholic Church changed the idea to a corporeal Jesus, because before 325 CE at the Council of Nicaea, what I just spoke about was the idea of a Christ, a title. But the Church changed the idea at the Council of Nicaea in 325 CE. They changed it to Jesus, okay? And they changed it to the idea that Jesus is the Son of God. And this son is one special individual, okay? Different from everybody else, which kind of goes right along with the way that Christianity taught is like God is separate from everybody else. God is different from us. But that's not how the ancient Africans taught these ideas. Ancient Africans taught that God basically, in a sense, extended itself even within us. All of us come from one source, and that source is just extending out and becoming more and more and more, okay? We're a part of that more, all right? So this one special person supposedly performed some miracles, like raising the dead. Okay, and this is going to take us back to the idea what I said, and I mentioned Lazarus. So the whole idea of Jesus was really it's the journey of a soul into the physical. So even when Jesus supposedly died on the cross, Jesus represented the idea of a soul that is descended into matter. And the cross is actually the four elements that are needed for a soul to become physical, into the physical world. Well, when they become physical, a soul is said to have died because all of a sudden it loses its unlimited awareness, okay? So that's why you see in the comedic symbolism, you'll see Osiris like a mummy, a one-leg mummy, okay? Because the soul is buried in the physical body. All right. So at that point, that person that's dead, okay, that's Lazarus. Because you're unaware, you just don't know. Okay. You don't know who you are as a soul. You forgot. The miracle of Christ, again, I said before, it was about enlightenment. Well, what did Christ do for Lazarus? Christ or Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. That means that individual became enlightened. Okay? That again, that's the simplified idea that we're talking about here. Is that Jesus in the story is not the message, okay? The message is the idea behind the story, and it's a universal idea that is applicable to all of us, okay? Not one special individual. So Christ is the aspect of us that enlightens us or becomes enlightened and raises us from the state of dead or being unaware, okay? That's the esoteric meaning in the esoteric language, okay? So when you really get deeper into these ideas, you'll see that the way if you take the exoteric, and the exoteric is the public meaning, okay, it's generalized public meaning, you take the exoteric layer off and you start looking at it from an esoteric or the secret meaning, the ideas are not too far off, except the only thing you're doing is that you think that you're talking about a historical person. And I know that a lot of the Christians, we were taught to believe that the reason we have certain experiences is only because Jesus walked the earth. But in reality, they're just our natural human experiences that Christianity has taught us to connect to Jesus, okay? To call it Jesus. No matter what it is that happens, it's Jesus that caused this, or it's because of Jesus that it happens, okay? So, again, the message is not, the story is not the message, okay? And that's a lot of times what we're taught. The story is the message. So you really have to be, when you're searching through these ideas and searching for more information, it really, as somebody who was a Christian, because I went through this stuff too, you really have to become courageous in the sense of you have to push to the side all the scary stuff that you've been taught as a Christian. You know, really and truly, if you think about it, you're taught not to go and seek knowledge. Because one of the things that Christianity wanted was people that did not question, They wanted people that would accept what they were teaching on faith. That's the only way the dogma took hold. Okay. So the courage comes in you as an individual understanding that your journey and your level of enlightenment is going to be different from everybody else. It's not going to happen at the same time, and it's not going to happen necessarily like everybody else, okay? So let me take the idea of the enlightenment, the Christ enlightenment, to a practical example, okay? And actually, I'll use a movie. How many of y'all have seen the movie? God dang, now I forgot the movie. It was Sanaa Lathan, Napoli Ever After. Napoli Ever After. When Sanaa was basically, you know, man, she was prim and proper. You know, she had the long straight hair, and you know, and that was her whole identity, was really wrapped around her looks and her hair. And then she realized through her ex or her boyfriend that, man, the way you are, it just doesn't connect with me. And then you remember the scene where all of a sudden she was in her room and she started to cut off all of her hair, okay? The moment that she realized that something needed to change, that moment, that single moment was her Christ moment. Something needed to change. At that moment, the old her died. Okay? At that moment, the old her died. That's the symbolic meaning of Christ or of Christ dying, okay? Of Jesus dying. And then when she started to find who she was resurrected. She was enlightened. So Christ enlightened her. Excuse me. Or that Christ's experience enlightened her. Okay, that's the spiritual meaning of that idea. Okay, not that you're supposed to be like somebody, but just things that we go through in our life. You probably know different things that happened to you in your life that were just as, mentally catastrophic, that changed you. Okay, the old you died, and in its place was an enlightened being. So these are things that happen over and over. So this is not a one-off thing. These are things that happen over and over. They can be something little. I mean, as far as driving a car or baking a cake, man, you figured out something that made the cake better. You know, those are all things of just about enlightenment. It can be the smallest thing, but it's something that's a part of us. That's the Christ in us. Okay, so you're all right, Marilyn. How's it going? So yeah, man, this is got a lot of my students here in the class. This is in the live. This is great. So guys, that's it. So I hope that I've given you a little bit of information that you can take and you can go further with it. Okay. So if you have questions, it was 11:11. If you have questions, then let's talk about these ideas. So
African spirituality versus religion. Did Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead? The Bible story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead is retelling the ancient African mythological characters of Osiris and Horus as aspects of the journey of the soul. The individual we know as Jesus Christ in modern times never existed. Everything about the individual was essentially backdated beginning in 325 CE at the Council of Nicaea. So here's what you'll learn in this video. Two themes of African spirituality that are central to the biblical gospel stories. Number two, the esoteric or secret meaning of Osiris. Number three, metaphorical keys to unlock the esoteric language of the Lazarus story. Number four, the esoteric meaning of Horus, aka Jesus. Number five, and finally breaking down the story and etymology of Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. What you know is Jesus Christ actually existed as part of the ancient African spiritual system at least 10,000 years before Christianity. I know this is a bold statement in the face of all the seeming evidence that exists, but the truth is that outside of the Bible, there is no documented evidence that proves a historical Jesus Christ. Remove the Bible, and his extraordinary deeds and miracles don't exist, except as the mythology of ancient Egypt. In this video, I'll help you fact-check the Bible. The ancient Kemetic system is the only African spiritual system that will allow you to fact-check the authenticity of the Bible as a revelation. Newsflash, it's not. I'll break down step by step the parts of the African spiritual system that become the biblical miracle of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. I'm going to break it down in a way that it will forever and consistently be Baroque. You must understand the mythological characters and what they esoterically symbolize before Christianity in order to fact check and decode the Bible story. We'll need to start with two central themes within the ancient African spiritual science, the noon and the soul. The central theme surrounding the stories of Osiris and Horus is about the journey of the spirit from the beginning of creation, emergence as an individualized soul, and the return to its origin. So let's get started. The journey from the noon and back. Within the Kemetic spiritual system, there's a common theme that everything in the universe began from one primordial source called the noon. The noon was an infinite abyss of watery chaos. The ancient Egyptians gave what would be considered an analysis of what was within the noon and the primordial gods, the Ogdoad, and the subsequent awakening of Atum. Now, I call the Ogdoad gods, but that's an error. They weren't gods. In the African system, they are functions of nature. In the ancient Egyptian system, a general name for these functions are natures. Our English word nature is a cognate of the word nature. In the ancient African cosmology, Osiris and Horus as metaphysical functions are part of our natural world too. The ancient Africans would say the soul is as natural as the body and the body as spiritual as the soul. The ancient Africans taught that all conscious spirit that began from the oneness of unity in the noon has infused within it the will to return to it. Upon the return or resurrection back into oneness, consciousness will be more enlightened and evolve through its journey than when it began. This is the central cosmological theme of the ancient Egyptians. They had a saying that encapsulated the idea, "In the beginning is Ba, and in the end is Ba." Translated, it means in the beginning is spirit, and in the end is spirit. So let's move forward to the central character in the journey. The journey of the soul. The soul became the central figure of this journey of the beginning and the return for the ancient Africans. For the ancient Egyptian spiritual system, they taught that there was a non-material world that is the foundation of our material world. They didn't think of it as separate as we do today. They acknowledged the idea of sounds and light beyond our physical senses to experience, but just as real as a physical experience. In the world beyond our senses, the soul exists as an energetic, aware consciousness with infinite knowledge and intelligence. The soul having infinite awareness is central to understanding what Osiris represents. The soul would journey from the beginning in the noon, drop down or fall into the physical body, and forget what it was. Along the way, it goes through difficulties that it must work through, until an enlightened realization that causes the soul to remember its own magnificence. The ancient Egyptians told the story of the soul's journey through the myth of Asar and Heru, who became Osiris and Horus when the Greeks and then the Romans came to Egypt. I have to introduce the name of Asar because of its etymological importance later. So the journey of the soul is the second part of two central ancient Egyptian themes that is foundational to expose the biblical Jesus Christ story. The names have been changed to protect the deceit. Let's move forward to the specific characters in the Egyptian mythology. I'll break them down and then connect them to the Lazarus miracle. What does Osiris symbolize? Now that you have this cosmological background, I'll start with Osiris and what he represents. In the story of the journey and return to the noon, The Osiris is the portion of the soul the ancient Africans call the intermediate Ka that falls from heaven into the human body. The fall is not direct into the human body, but I have to kind of edit the story here. The ancient Egyptian idea of what constitutes a soul is much more detailed than what Christianity taught. In early Christianity, they dumbed down the idea of the soul so much that the term loses any significance for what the energetic aspect of you is being affected. For example, the higher Ka never descends into the body. It stays above as a lookout or guide, so to speak, for Osiris. You can think of the body as an automaton or zombie mind, and the intermediate Ka animates it. The physical body is ruled over by its lower Kas of emotion, our mind, physical and psychological makeup. The Osiris or intermediate Ka is trapped inside the physical body and wants to awaken this physical expression of itself to the full knowledge of its higher Ka, or higher self, as we call it in modern times. But the zombie mind wants to believe that it's the primary aspect of its existence. An ongoing battle ensues between logical mind and intuitive spirit. Now, if you understand what I just said, then you have the elemental foundation of the Jesus story and what it means conceptually. So give me a nod yes and a hallelujah, and then I'll know you understand. If not, it will become clear as I unfold the story. The keys to unlocking the esoteric meaning. Now, I need to give you some keys to unlock the esoteric meaning of the Jesus story in the Gospels. What's lost for most that read the Bible is that the point of view of the characters in the Gospels is from the soul, not a human body. A key to understanding the Bible is understanding Osiris as a stage of the cycle of the soul's journey before returning back to the noon. Osiris metaphorically is the spark of light that's implanted as a seed of divinity within mankind. Osiris is the soul or light is bound up within the body but genderless. The one leg means the soul is not male or female. He's buried and waiting to be resurrected so that he can connect with the wisdom of the Father, which is the higher Ka. In the Bible, the words death, dying, and die are talking metaphorically about the soul. Jesus dying on the cross esoterically means the soul descending into the physical body. The words blind, asleep, and deaf are states of the ego and physical person. Lazarus was asleep. The word light refers to the spark, but it can also refer to enlightenment, which is wisdom. The sun can be exchanged for the word light. For example, I am the light of the world can mean all of the above. Osiris is an archetypal aspect that's a part of every human being on the planet. Osiris is the soul within all mankind that is the seed buried in the womb of thy flesh with the potential to evolve into an enlightened being. Next up, Horus. The esoteric meaning of Horus, aka Jesus. So Osiris is, quote, buried in this body. While buried in the body, the soul is said to have died. Get it? Dead and buried. From the point of view of the soul, earth is the underworld. The soul in the heavens is fully aware and comes down into the underworld and metaphorically dies. This is why Osiris is called the god of the underworld. He is the spark of divinity buried within mankind that its higher self hopes to wake up. While in the body, the soul is in the valley of the shadow of death. While in the underworld, the zombie and its ego can take over and get caught up in what's happening in life. The newly realized state of awareness of the zombie awakening is called Horus, aka Jesus. Horus or Jesus heals the blind or awakens them. In that moment, Christ is born or resurrected. Again, depending on the point of view. I was blind, but now I see means you have become enlightened and aware. This is the key to unlock more scriptures and their esoteric meaning. The glyph for Osiris is a clue to the idea of becoming a Christ. His glyph is an eye and a throne. The eye is a symbol for awareness. This should also connect what the eye of Horus is about. Horus is the new realized state of awakening or having your eyes opened, or better yet, your third eye opened. The ancient Egyptians symbolized the mental and psychological aspect within an unaware person as a stubborn donkey. The Osiris or intermediate Ka finds it difficult to control the stubborn donkey. But his job is to guide the stubborn donkey along its path of awakening and become a fully realized and aware consciousness. Remember the story in Mark chapter 11, verse 1 through 11? Jesus was riding into Jerusalem on a donkey to triumphant cheers from the crowd. But now that you have the esoteric keys, you can decipher the symbolic meaning that as a Christ, he was in control of his lower cause or ego. This all is happening while the soul is in the valley of the shadow of death or the underworld of earth. That's the esoteric meaning. But we're taught the exoteric idea as a historical event happening to a physical person. Historicizing this mythological teaching about a spirit's desire to awaken us to our enlightened state strips it of its relevance of the story that we could even use today. Jesus and Christ are Horus and Osiris as two different states of being. Jesus or Horus is the function of the revealer or awakener of the Osiris and the savior of the seed of divinity within mankind. In ancient Egypt, death came through ignorance. Not of the body, but the second death for the soul that never becomes aware is lost. Therefore, Horus or Jesus is the soul salvation when wisdom is gained. When enlightenment occurs, you become a Christ. On one level, Horus, aka Jesus, is the archetypal function or act of a human being acquiring wisdom, not a historical person. So next, breaking down the story and etymology of Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. Now let's have a little fun and look at the miracle of Jesus and Lazarus through the decoded symbolism.
Hey family, Reginald Martin here. Are you feeling stuck in life, struggling mentally to find direction and purpose after questioning your Christian beliefs? It's time for a breakthrough. Introducing Unapologetically You, a 3-month program for overcoming negative religious programming and living authentically. This is a one-of-a-kind life-changing coaching program tailored for those on the journey of breaking away from Christianity. My unique skills, knowledge base, and personalized guidance help you to unlearn the negative programming, reform your shattered beliefs, prioritize your own needs without feeling guilty or selfish, and unlock your potential to live life on your terms, and you can discover your true purpose. You can transform your life, throw off those mental shackles, and reach your true potential with Unapologetically You, a 3-month program for overcoming negative religious programming and living authentically. Ready to take that first step? Click the link in the video description to access my exclusive free video, packed with valuable insights to jumpstart your journey. Visit workwithreginaldmartin.com and begin the journey to living life on your terms. Back to the video.
One of the names for Osiris before the Greek rename was Osar. He was known as the Nebuchadnezzar or Lord Christ. The origin of the name Lazarus is a modification of the original title Al-Asar or the Lord. It was the Arabic prefix AL added to the name Asar. As the name was translated through different languages, the A was dropped and an S was added at the end to form the name Lazarus. Lazarus had two sisters, Mary and Martha. Both names are a cognate of the Egyptian word MR or Mary. One meaning of the Egyptian name is beloved, but on a spiritual science level, it means to magnetize or draw in. This is where the law of attraction ideas come from. Remember in the movie The Secret, they alluded to the Greeks having the secret centuries ago. Well, guess where the Greeks got the secret from? Their African teachers, of course. Have you ever wondered why Jesus had so many Marys around him? It's because in the spiritual science, the natural function of feminine netters were the environment that attracted certain seeds to produce experience. The two sisters in the miracle of Lazarus were actually the ancient netters of Isis and Nephthys. Isis is symbolized with a throne on the top of her head, and Nephthys is symbolized with a square and a right angle symbol within the square on the top of her head. This is the symbol for a house in Egyptian hieroglyphs, or Medu Netcher, as the natives call it. You'll recognize these two Egyptian feminine functions based on how they're introduced in Luke chapter 10, verse 38 and 39. It's cleverly coded esoteric knowledge that is right under our nose. But unless you know the African connection, you will miss the veil symbolism. So here's the introduction of Mary and Martha. Isis and Nephthys. In verse 38, it says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened up her home to him. Verse 39 says, she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. In these two scriptures, Martha or Nephthys opened her home to him and Mary sat at the Lord's feet. The hieroglyphic symbols of Isis and Nephthys are cleverly disguised and referenced. Of course, once you know the keys, the rest of the story reads like a play. But it's no more than the spiritual science being explained. It's being explained to those that would know the esoteric symbols of Osiris being awakened from the dead by Horus as the function of the revealer of wisdom and truth. We've been taught that Jesus performed a miracle. In reality, it's a story of what's possible within you. You have the seed or spark of God within you. On a deeper, more expanded level, it's about you assimilating your life experience to a point that you become energetically balanced. In Buddhism, it's called the middle way. It means to not be too extreme either way. In the Kemetic system, it's practicing ma'at, or being balanced. The story of Lazarus is not a miracle for you to marvel at and worship. It's explaining the archetypal journey that we all must take if we're to rise consciously. We must awaken from our slumber. The end. Thank you for watching. Like, subscribe, and share.
Hi, this is Reginald Kouakarou, founder of Kemetic Centered Living, here to share some ancient truths that will help you lay a foundation to get rid of negative thinking and limiting beliefs caused by religious indoctrination so you can rewire your mind for success. In this video, I'll help you understand ancient symbolic language so that you can decipher hidden esoteric meaning in the Bible and break through to powerful truths that will help you elevate consciously and empower you. When you grasp the meaning of the ancient symbolism, you'll begin to unravel Christian concepts that didn't make sense to you. As a Christian, without the foundation of the knowledge of the ancient symbolism and mythology, you're continually trying to make sense out of nonsense. But first, we have to address a negative mindset that have held Christian religious people back and keeps them locked into a life of limitation and fear. The negative indoctrination doesn't simply go away once you leave Christianity. There is a reason why you look anywhere in the world and see communities of the African diaspora that are not economically self-sustaining. The foundation can be found in religious indoctrination that creates a belief system built on victimization and helplessness, waiting on a savior to come back and set things straight. If this mindset is not addressed and changed, then the African diaspora will remain locked in a life where a negative mindset will keep us locked in a life of mediocrity and limitation. This negative mindset is the part that does not go away once you leave Christianity. It's negative conditioning created to keep you hooked into a system controlling you with fear and helplessness. How do you know if you still have a negative mindset after leaving Christianity? Simple. If, when you think of any major change in your life that involves uncertainty, like going after a job promotion, starting a business, getting involved in a new relationship, your immediate default setting is to consider the worst that can happen to you. It's the unfortunate mindset of a people that have been bombarded with ideas of needing to stay safe when they feel helpless because of impending danger and catastrophe. They see the world in black and white, with enemies lurking on every corner. It's a world full of fear and uncertainty. That mindset keeps you from even trying to advance and grow in any area of your life. Too many of the African diaspora have accepted this negative programming without examining the effect it has in so many areas of our lives.
It's an insidious form of low self-esteem that runs rampant in our minds. Psychologist Nathaniel Brandon, in his book, The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem, says, with people of low self-esteem, negatives have more power over their lives than positive. So ask yourself, do you have a negative mindset? Be honest with yourself, because you cannot change what you do not own. As a people, we need to change our mindset individually so that we can change the collective. But it starts first with know thyself. So let's examine one aspect of this limiting mindset. It involves stripping you of the ability to critically think. Christianity, through its indoctrination, has a workaround to keep believers out of constant mental conflict. They call it faith, but in reality, it's mind control techniques. The most devout Christians have in common an inability to think for themselves. It's by design. Part of being a believer is to accept absurd ideas and concepts as Christians. No matter how absurd, a believer must accept it without question. Many ideas that are nothing but nonsense to common logic. Here's what I mean by that. Christianity teaches if you don't question the nonsense, simply believe and have faith that what we tell you is factual and the truth, then you will be safe from hell and any other torment that God has in store for non-believers. This threat, whether implied or spoken, keeps most Christians from ever examining the doctrines given them. For example, an absurd story that makes no logical sense that you must accept as a believer is Adam and Eve as the first humans on earth and that had three sons, Cain, Abel, and Seth. From two of those sons, the whole world was populated.
But that is impossible.
Now, logically, everyone knows a man cannot birth a child. The logical question for anyone would be, if Adam and Eve were the first parents, a man and a woman that produces three sons, then who did the sons conceive children with? Any person with knowledge of basic human biology would dismiss the story or at least start to ask questions and dig deeper to reconcile the inconsistency with natural science. Or they try to make sense out of nonsense with the next logical conclusion. The sons had to have sex with their mother. Yes, I've actually been told that by a Christian when I asked him to make sense out of the Adam and Eve story. However, with the Christian indoctrination workaround, if you simply accept the story as true on faith, then any critical analysis of the story stops. And according to the practice of many Christians, the less you question, the stronger your faith, which validates your commitment to the faith, which implies a strong spiritual commitment. Do you see the logic trap here? Again, this was by design. The indoctrination workaround is basically this.
Hey family, Reginald Martin here. Are you feeling stuck in life, struggling mentally to find direction and purpose after questioning your Christian beliefs? It's time for a breakthrough. Introducing Unapologetically You, a 3-month program for overcoming negative religious programming and living authentically. This is a one-of-a-kind, life-changing coaching program tailored for those on the journey of breaking away from Christianity. My unique skills, knowledge base, and personalized guidance help you to unlearn the negative programming, reform your shattered beliefs, prioritize your own needs without feeling guilty or selfish, and unlock your potential to live life on your terms, and you can discover your true purpose. You can transform your life, throw off those mental shackles, and reach your true potential with Unapologetically You, a 3-month program for overcoming negative religious programming and living authentically. Ready to take that first step? Click the link in the video description to access my exclusive free video, packed with valuable insights to jumpstart your journey. Visit workwithreginaldmartin.com and begin the journey to living life on your terms. Back to the video.
An absurdity presented as historical fact which is two suns that the world was populated from, believe it without question, which implies strong belief and faith. Belief does not need any facts. The definition of an opinion is a belief without facts to support it. The person who gave me the incest answer had to make the story true because to question it means their faith and salvation would be in peril. Many theologians through the centuries have asserted that blind faith is a higher spiritual level. Only within Christianity is ignorance and blind faith a victory for higher spiritual attainment. It's the only way that a believer is not thrown into constant cognitive dissonance and will accept the absurd in order to make sense out of nonsense. It's mind control, not spirituality. So that's one of the mindsets that hold many people back within Christianity. For people that leave Christianity, it can negatively impact your ability to critically think simply because you were trained to not think for yourself. But for those of you that are brave enough to begin to question, I want to connect the dots for you through helping you understand the ancient Kemetic symbolism, which is the origin of the New Testament Gospels and other books of the Bible. When I finally grasped this knowledge, it helped answer so many of those questions I had, even those I didn't know I had. It filled in the blanks for me, and I know it'll do the same for you. These symbols have many layers and can have different meanings based on the level of knowledge and understanding of the receiver. So this is not meant to be exhaustive or complete, only an introduction to help you begin to uncover the nonsense and make it make sense through gaining knowledge of the original ancient African source. So I'm going to break down for you some of the ancient symbolism of the biblical Jesus story presented with the other Christian mental workaround, miracles. The irony is, when you understand the symbolism, the mythology becomes relevant to your everyday life again, because it's meant to give you universal knowledge and information about the human condition and our journey as a soul having a human experience. Not a magical event you simply marvel at, to confirm the greatness of the character in the story. I want you to know that if you're Christian or ever was, how extraordinary you are to be watching this video. You're extraordinary because through all the indoctrination, purposely designed to keep you afraid and ignorant of the truth, you still broke free. Not only that, you've risked estrangement from your family, friends, and church support system, and the possibility of becoming an outcast and shunned. And on top of it all, according to Christianity, the mere fact that you question puts your soul in peril of being tormented in hell for eternity. You are mentally one of the strongest individuals on the planet, and therefore not ordinary, because this is not yet popular to examine. You're not ordinary. You're extraordinary, and I mean that with all the respect and admiration that a human being can muster. So now that I've shed some light on this mindset, let's critically analyze the miracle of Jesus turning water into wine. So here we go. I'm going to break it down to you so that it will be forever and consistently Baroque. But I'll fix it with the empowering original message that the ancient Africans intended. But you'll need a little background knowledge first for some context. This ancient knowledge began with the interior Africans over thousands of years ago, traveled up the ancient superhighway of knowledge and information known as the Nile River to ancient Kemet, part of which is now known as Egypt. The Egyptians taught satellite countries well before Europe came into focus. Finally, it filtered into Europe, the Mediterranean, and Asia Minor through the Greek Gnostics that wrote books that finally became the New Testament that the Romans used to fabricate the Christian religion. Now, let's go into the foundation of African spirituality. This is needed so you can understand the Greek Gnostics that wrote the books that became the New Testament and what they really meant in their stories. They took a fringe aspect of ancient Kemetic knowledge. They wrote the knowledge in a coded esoteric language because they broke the ancient Kemetic mystery school oral traditions by writing it down, and then put the information in a story form for ancient plays. The foundation of ancient Kemetic spirituality, and by default, their Greek students who wrote the New Testament Gospels, is that the eternal soul is the main character in its mythology that became Bible stories. The metaphysical world is the heavens, and the earth is the underworld for a soul encapsulated within the human body. The Greeks call the underworld of earth Hades or hell. These are the ideas the Greeks learned from the Africans. They didn't have a philosophy or spirituality before they made contact with the ancient Egyptians. As a spiritual being having a human experience, you are gods and goddesses in training. From the ancient Kemetic perspective and teachings, you're learning that life is an illusion. Many ancient spiritual systems have taught that the world we live in is an illusion. Today, we erroneously interpret it as not real. But for the ancients, it meant that you, as a god or goddess in training, have the power to create your life in this world known as the underworld or hell. For the ancients, the illusion is that you have no power over this world. But the ancient truth is that you're made in the image of God with the ability to create. In the Bible, John chapter 10, verse 34, Jesus even states that you are a god. Religion keeps you afraid of living life on your terms because you fear going to hell, when in reality, this life is your training ground to create heaven. From the ancient Kemetic spiritual perspective, you're in hell now. Earth is a difficult place for all souls. As a human, we all go through difficulties in life. You are a soul having a human experience. Within African spirituality, hell or earth is where you learn forever through multiple lifetimes, not burn forever as a punishment. Through Kemetic teachings, you learn that the difficulties of life are analogous to lifting weights. Those difficulties are supposed to make you mentally and spiritually stronger, not weak, helpless, depending on a god to fight your battles and waiting on a savior to rescue you. But from the ancient Kemetic perspective, earth is not something you simply endure, hoping to get to a resting place called heaven when you die. It's a training ground in which you are to learn how to create your own heaven within you. The idea that physical life as a training ground for the soul is confirmed in the ancient symbolism and mythology that became part of the Bible through the Roman Catholic Church. You'll see this plainly when you understand the hidden symbolism behind the biblical miracle of Jesus turning water into wine in John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. There are many esoteric nuances in this story that are truly spiritual science and processes that will help you. But I'm going to focus on the idea that confirms the overall ancient hidden meaning of the story. This will help you with your mindset about the difficulties of life and be more empowered. You're not cursed, as so many of the African diaspora have been taught to accept and believe. You're in training as gods and goddesses. Let's start with me teaching you about some basic symbolism that pretty much everyone is familiar with, so you can have some background knowledge to help you connect the dots and make sense out of what I'm teaching you here, and give you the ability to critically analyze all the Bible stories. The ancients taught about four elements that are the foundation of everything in the universe. If you're aware of astrology, you're familiar with the four elements of fire, water, air, and earth. Each of them are metaphors or analogies to connect you intuitively to deeper metaphysical knowledge that cannot always be expressed through spoken language. It's using natural symbols or analogies to help you grasp something beyond physical experience in your natural state as a soul. Each symbol is multi-layered that also has implied meanings beyond the obvious. This is where the ancient Africans expect your intuition to kick in when studying the symbolic language. The symbols were designed purposefully in this way. This takes trust in yourself and the ability to critically think. Without this knowledge, the story remains in the miracle category of disconnected logical nonsense. You then never question the nonsense. One ancient symbolic meaning for water is a metaphor for representing crossing a barrier from non-physical into physical. As a side note, this was the original meaning of baptism. The ancient Egyptians represented water symbolically as a wave. The letter N became a shorthand representation of the hieroglyph for water symbolically representing a wave. The Egyptian concept of the noon is a watery abyss. The word noon with the two N's visually would look like a wave without the vowel U in it. This was not by accident. That wave can also represent vibration, which translates into our emotions while physical. Everything in the universe vibrates. All things exist at different levels and phases of vibration, from a thought to a mountain. But I digress. A key ancient philosophical foundation to understand is that water and fire are the two most basic elements in the universe. Now, please don't take these elements literally as water and fire. They're metaphors or analogies that approximate how something works or functions in the metaphysical world, or what the ancients called the heavens. Allow me to dive a little deeper into why certain symbols were used by the ancients, because I want you to really get this and understand. It'll free you. Now, philosophically speaking, the ancient Africans taught that fire is the first cause of all. But why? Because for anything to exist and manifest, there must first be a desire. The desire to be and exist is the first cause of any and everything in the universe. That's manifesting 101. On one symbolic level, fire, as an analogy, represents an intense desire. For example, to have a sexual union is an intense desire for normal functioning human beings. So in ancient symbolism, one meaning for fire can equate to or be an analogy for desire. But secondarily, or implied with the symbol of fire, is that it also gives us heat and light. These aspects are all represented by the multidimensional symbol of fire within ancient symbolism. As Christians, we were taught to associate fire negatively to hell. But the truth is so much more empowering than the lie we were given. Ancient Egyptian mythology used the idea of Atum creating desire within himself through masturbation as the first impetus to create the universe. Again, the whole story has many philosophical nuances that I'm not addressing here. But philosophically speaking, that initial fire within Atum is the first cause of all things. But there's also the implied aspects of light and heat that fire generate used within symbolic and metaphorical language. The light from fire reveals what is in the darkness. Let's look at the use of fire, heat, and water implied symbolically in the biblical miracle performed by Jesus, and show you how the ancient esoteric understanding makes it relevant to everyday life. We're taught that it is a historical event that we should simply marvel at and worship because it proved how special Jesus was. However, understanding that the story is from the perspective of a soul in the physical underworld of Hades or hell will remove the need for a miracle that cannot logically be explained and only be believed on faith. It will also connect us to how special you are individually, and how special we are as humans and a collective. So modern science estimates that the body is 2/3 water. The ancients knew this fact centuries ago as well. But for them, science and spirituality were not separate fields of study. The scientific, concrete facts helped them make sense of our metaphysical experience. This is where the ancient Hermetic idea of correspondence came about. You know this concept through the axiom, as above, so below. As Christians, we had the same idea stated in the Lord's Prayer, as on earth as it is in heaven. In other words, correspondence means if you understand how something functions on the physical plane of earth, it can give you a clue as to how it functions in the spiritual or metaphysical plane or the heavens. The story of Jesus turning water into wine is giving you a spiritual truth that's common to all of humanity in symbolic and mythological form. There are nuances implied in the story for those that grasp the symbols being used. This is the simple universal truth that the miracle of turning water into wine is expressing. As you go through life's difficulties, you gain wisdom and elevate consciously. In other words, as you experience life, you become wiser. That's a natural fact. There are many more levels and nuances that can be gained from the myth and symbology that the receiver can glean from their own level of knowledge rather than someone trying to explain every little detail or tell them what to believe. A curious thing happens when natural revelation occurs, deciphering the meaning from the symbols rather than reading it or someone telling you. And that is that the knowledge becomes experiential. You get the aha moments that only comes when you go through something yourself. For example, a person can have an idea of success as having money and fame. But then they get what they thought was success and find that it's not all that they thought it would be. The aha or realization is what the ancients would have called the Christ moment, the state of becoming enlightened. At some point, the famous person may realize that success is an inward appreciation that may have very little meaning to anyone else. But the aha moment or realization can bring them a level of peace. That realization or Christ moment would not have come without experiencing the money and level of fame they reached. Well, the ancients taught these same ideas to initiates. They did so through clever play on words and symbolism that they could apply to many different experiences that would give the same aha moment. One way the ancients symbolized the life's difficulties was going through a fire, which is another way to express the symbol of fire. We still, to this day, symbolically use the idea of heat and fire to symbolize going through difficulties. For example, ever heard the phrase, going from the frying pan into the fire? Have you ever been in hot water? Have you ever been heated at someone? Have you ever seen an athlete fired up about a game? You ever been boiling mad? When you finally understood, did the light bulb come on? These are all states that we still use this idea of heat, light, and fire as metaphors for going through difficulties and other experiences in life to this day. The person that reaches the level of fame and fortune might have gone through depression, lost relationships, feeling lonely even though thousands of people adored them from afar. The events and states were their fire. In many cases, the biblical miracles are esoterically expressing these ideas that are universal to all of humanity. But because we were taught these ideas as religious history, we worship and revere them, never knowing their true nature and simple meaning. Now you should have a better understanding of why certain symbols are used and what they mean. Now you should be able to use your critical thinking skills and intuition to decipher many Bible stories. Now let's get into turning water into wine and why it matters to you personally. The ancients had a working knowledge of earth science as well and used metaphor to connect the dots. Processes in nature became analogies for our life and functions within our lives. The ancients used the process of turning fruit juice into wine as one of these analogies for life. This is the underlying esoteric meaning of the miracle of Jesus turning water into wine. Going back to my earlier statement in the video, a biblical miracle really means that the illogical story had to be disconnected from your analytical mind. But when you understand the origin of the story and the esoteric meaning, it makes perfect sense as an analogy for our life and the human condition. So let's break down the miracle first scientifically and then esoterically. Here's the science. In order for any fruit juice to become wine, it has to ferment. Part of the process of fermenting involves the idea of the sugars being boiled or heated in order to transform the juice into wine. The fermentation process became a way the ancients symbolized life's difficulties metaphorically. Our famous person may have gone through depression, breakups, and other emotionally difficult experiences in order to finally come to the realization that money and fame were not a true measure of success. But in order to gain that wisdom in life, they had to go through those difficulties. It was through processing life and all its difficulties that a person would recognize the sweetness of life and become like a fine wine and consciously elevate it. That's the spiritual meaning of the story. Now I need to connect the metaphoric language and symbolism for you. The enlightenment you gained along the way is the light of wisdom. Jesus is the Greek expression of the personification of wisdom being revealed to you in a flash of clarity. In the Bible, the scripture John chapter 8 verse 12 states, "Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.'" This scripture is written with esoteric symbolism. The simple universal meaning is this: when wisdom is revealed, you've become spiritually elevated through the fermentation process that life experiences offer and enlightened by those experiences. Not by proxy, simply by believing as we were taught as Christians, but through actual life experiences when you overcome difficulties in life. From the Christian perspective, one simply accepts on faith that the miracle happened. You never question or ask about the deeper meaning of the story because it's a fact that you're supposed to accept and marvel at. But it keeps you ignorant of the practical knowledge to be gained from understanding the symbolic language. Jesus turned water into wine was a biblical miracle, but it was the ancients expressing how gaining wisdom is an active process that's revealed to us. The person, man or woman, that the light comes on for gains the title of a Christ. You don't need a certification or degree to gain that title. It's your own inner knowing. The part of using your own inner knowing the church didn't like because you didn't need anyone else's validation to obtain the title of a Christ. Individuality and self-determination becomes a threat to the power and control over you. Wisdom is your savior from ignorance, which is being blind to your own divinity. Your life experience is the fermenting or boiling process that elevates you to a Christ. Again, the biblical Jesus is the personification of the revealed word or light of wisdom. To really simplify the ancient meaning of Christ, it's the aha moment that is common to us all. The flash of clarity. It's that instant when the light bulb comes on and we are forever changed by it. Notice the metaphors I'm using pertaining to light, even explaining this idea. The ancient expression of Christ is no more complicated than what I just explained. Because the ancient symbolism was not understood, we've been taught to worship the personification of the concept of enlightenment without any background knowledge of what the symbolism means. A big part of that is we didn't even know the symbolic language because we were told it was history to accept without question. Because the symbolism is consistent, it can help you begin to decipher a nonsensical biblical story like Adam and Eve. These stories become relevant when you grasp that the symbolism and the mythology are not just make-believe. My point is not to destroy anyone's belief and leave them with nothing. I consider that spiritual malpractice. It's to educate you and cause you to look a little deeper and awaken the African diaspora to the ancient knowledge and information that you can apply in your everyday life to empower you and our communities worldwide. There is a reason that there are more churches in most Black communities worldwide than there are businesses owned by Black people. Through the indoctrination of religion, we're taught that not thinking, being ignorant, docile, and without any level of curiosity and creativity is a higher spiritual plane. We've been taught to fear everyone because they have more power. We've been taught to think of ourselves in limited ways, such as being broken and worshiping a savior that is the ideal we should aspire to be physically, mentally, and spiritually. This ideal savior looks nothing like us. So through subconscious and conscious programming, we've been taught to hate our own image and see ourselves negatively as being sinners, cursed, and filthy rags. Those ideas were never taught by our African ancestors. The truth is that you are divine and powerful. The Bible stories have been twisted to mentally and spiritually contain you and all of humanity. The consequences of accepting these ideas are being played out within the African diaspora all over the world. These beliefs that we have accepted without question and analysis are why so many of our Black communities all over the world are in shambles and cannot sustain themselves economically. We must rewire our minds to throw off the shackles that keep us poor, believing we're helpless and waiting on a savior to usher us into heaven or a God to smite our more powerful enemies. The enemies are not out there. That's the illusion that the ancient Africans have taught us about. No one has any power over you except what you give them in your own mind. Remember, the illusion is that we are powerless over our circumstances and our enemies. Until you rewire your mind, you will keep trying to make sense out of nonsense. But I've given you a few keys to make it make sense. You are gods and goddesses in training. The fight is not with the enemies out there. It's shining the light into the darkness of ignorance and breaking the chains of fear that keep us feeling limited and helpless. What fear do you have that keeps you from going for that promotion? What doubts do you carry about yourself that keep you from striking out on your own and starting a business? What negative beliefs about yourself do you hold on to and stop you from getting into a relationship because you believe you're broken? These are all negative programs that we've accepted. The foundation of many are from religious programming that seeps into our everyday life. These programs are running rampant and unchecked in us individually and the African diaspora as a whole. The ancestors have left you the knowledge to rekindle your soul and teach you that you are the architect and creator of your world. You can keep your faith. You can keep your negative programming. Or you can learn the processes needed to rewire your mind. The choice is yours. The only person with the power to stop you is you. Thank you for watching. Please subscribe, like, and share with anyone that would be vibrationally uplifted and consciously elevated by this.